This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by MMComfortSystems.com. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
Despite admittedly low voter turnout, some promising news in the elections across the state of Washington, particularly in Seattle. This is, of course, assuming that the numbers hold. Now, as you know, we live in a state that is rather maddening in how we have to wait for the results. But generally speaking, things don't change all that much unless we're talking about very, very, very tight races. And in some cases, they are tight races. We'll start outside of Seattle because Seattle gets all of the glory and I don't like that. Edmonds is looking really, really good for booting out an incumbent progressive council member, Luke Distelhorst. They're going to put in his place, a business-friendly Air Force veteran by the name of Janelle Cass, friend of the show. And I'm taking credit for her win in the primary because she was on the show last week.
Imagine that. Jason Rantz taking credit.
Anyone who's been on the show and did not do so well was their own fault. I can only do so much. But of course, when they win, I'm taking all of the credit. So Janelle Cass is going into the general. Make sure you support her when we get to the general election. Snohomish County Council members Nate Nehring, Sam Lowe, friends of mine. They cruised to an easy win heading into the general. John Kartak, Snohomish mayor, not doing so well, trailing Linda Redmond by a little bit over 100 votes or so. It's the only thing that's separating the two. Dennis King is in the lead right now for Puyallup City Council. We like Dennis. He's someone who supports, in a big way, the safety measures that we need to take in order to protect the public from criminals who are taking advantage of a state that kind of allows them to do whatever it is they want. Victoria Woodards, the mayor in Tacoma, she sailed to the general. She's going to take on Steve Haverly. And Jimmy Mata, our friend from Burien, and by friend, I mean guy we embarrassed on the radio the other day. This is interesting. He is technically in the lead still by 20-something votes. So less than 30 votes. This is an incumbent who apparently is very, very popular because he's been so good for Burien. He's only 20-ish votes ahead of a guy who effectively dropped out of the race. Now, I'm assuming that means Mark Dorsey, who wasn't really running, will then get back into the race. That's my assumption. Don't know. We'll reach out to him and see if he'll come on and talk about where things happen to be in Mark Dorsey. But Mark Dorsey will be the challenger. Jimmy Mata, of course, is the one who pretended to be the victim of a hate crime with white supremacy, Nazi symbolism that wasn't Nazi symbolism at all. They were just calling him a communist. So we'll be paying close attention to that particular race. In Seattle, it is very clear who the two mayoral candidates will be. It will be Bruce Harrell, who right now has little over 38% of the vote, taking on Lorena Gonzalez, who only has about 28.5%, 29% of the vote. In this particular race, to me, I think it's interesting not only in who advanced, but who did not advance, the ones who did really, really, really poorly. And I pay close attention to one particular candidate, the one who couldn't be bothered to pay his rent despite having a job at the time that he decided to stop paying his rent, in Andrew Grant Houston.
Ace. Call him Ace.
Which I remember them saying that's his nickname. I don't remember where it came from.
No, I just heard he likes to be called Ace.
But it's Andrew Grant Houston. Why not Ugus? Ugga.
Ah.
Like the sound you make when you hear he could potentially become a mayor, you go, ah.
Oh, you don't just be like, oh man, that guy's an ace.
No. He only garnered 2,288 votes as of now. And maybe, to be fair to him, the next dump of votes comes later tonight or tomorrow, he'll be able to get to 2,289 votes. So it's certainly possible, and I don't want to undercut his potential success. But this is a dude who, from a democracy voucher standpoint, raised almost $400,000. Now, each individual voter gets $100 of democracy vouchers, four $25 vouchers. You can give all of them to one candidate. You can give 25 to one, 25 to another, up into 100. How is it that he only had 2,288 votes, and yet all of that money coming from democracy vouchers? Detective Rantz smells something fishy here. And then once we determined it was because Peyton didn't wear deodorant today, I then looked at this number and I said, something's wrong here.
Look, I got lost when I was packing, okay? Yeah.
Something's off here. And so I think we're going to be putting Detective Rantz on the case.
You should really look into his Twitter bio because it's horrendous. It says, I will act, in quotes, and then he gives himself credit. It says, dash, Andrew Grant Houston, ace, in parentheses.
Oh my gosh.
He, him, his. And then his bio, or sorry, his header also says, I will act. So this guy lets you know twice in a very small amount of real estate there that he will act.
Should have been, I will lose.
Yeah.
Because that's what happened.
Would have been more honest.
So he got his butt kicked. We're going to be looking into how the money looked the way that it did. The good news as far as the Seattle City Attorney's race goes, because we are obviously on this show and in the city, we've been pulling for Ann Davison. We wanted her to win because not only is she just a good person, but when you look specifically at what she'd like to do, it's like, oh, you actually want to enforce the law. And that makes sense. She is currently in the lead with 34% of the vote against what looks to be a near tie between Pete Holmes and the abolitionist in Nicole Thomas Kennedy. Pete Holmes right now is beating the abolitionist by only less than 600 votes. Even for Ann Davison, who's ahead by about 2,000, 2,500 votes or so, things can change very quickly, so I'm keeping my eye on this particular race. The good news is she's in the lead right now, but you know in Seattle, the people who vote at the last minute are the socialists and progressives who live in the, you know, the backyard cottages of their parents, and there's a lot of them. Those are the ones who put Shama Sawant into office. So we'll see how things progress. She spoke, Ann Davison, to Como last night.
Crime is known to be able to be welcome to make a home here. And we need to change that reputation. Right now, we need to reconcile with the fact that we are failing to meet the needs of the most vulnerable, as well as the basic functions of public health and safety. And so when we correct it at this seat, we will be able to then take care of the people that are in need.
Now, I'm curious to see if that last bit of votes go to Nicole Thomas Kennedy, who is the abolitionist.
Abolition isn't about ignoring harm. It's not about ignoring victims.
But it is. I mean, maybe you don't want it to be the case that you're ignoring harm and victims by not punishing the people who committed the crimes against the victims. And then, of course, ensuring that those criminals end up creating more victims in the city. But that's the reality of the situation. But please continue your spin.
Abolition isn't just a process of abolishing the police and tomorrow we wake up in a lawless society. It's about a process of building up community so they can handle the problems and deal with things before they become a problem.
Uh-huh. Okay. But what about when they are a problem? How about this? How about you address the root causes of the reason why the problem exists, while simultaneously also dealing with the fact that there are current problems that need to be addressed? So I look at these numbers, regardless at the end of the day that Pete Holmes is doing so poorly as an incumbent is good news, of course, for our friend Ann Davison. Sarah Nelson, running for the council position that is vacated by Lorena Gonzalez, who desperately wants to but will not become mayor. She is in a pretty significant lead, despite the fact that polling showed Nikita Oliver, the socialist and abolitionist, in the lead. Sarah Nelson spoke to Como as well.
It's changed from a lot of sort of ideological rhetoric to an effort to put forward pragmatic, progressive solutions.
So Sarah Nelson is a Democrat, but, you know, Democrats will always win in Seattle, certainly in the near future. And so the question is, can we find a Democrat who's not an insane person? And even in Seattle, that's possible. It's become increasingly difficult to find that. But with Sarah Nelson, who's a small business owner, what's she, Fremont Brewery?
Yes.
Fremont Brewery, yeah, which is a great brewery, by the way. I don't even drink, and I like that place.
Yeah, I like them.
She is currently in the lead, and she's someone that I think we can and should get behind. She's going to be on the show about 2 hours from now. Nikita Oliver will also advance, but not in as strong a place as she certainly had hoped. She says that she's going to stand up for the people.
I'm feeling very excited. I am committed.
I am feeling very excited. The excitement, it's coming out of my pores.
She needed note cards for that.
I'm just so excited, and I just can't hide it. I'm going to lose control, and I think I like it.
I like slam poetry.
Can we not get, like, when you're talking about being excited, can be like, I'm so excited. I am willing and able to take on this fight for you.
There's not that much serotonin in the world.
Just nothing. Just nothing.
I am committed to doing the things that actually meet people's basic needs and respond to those crises rather than pandering to corporations.
Yeah, pandering to corporations. 70-ish% of the jobs in Seattle come from small businesses, not from corporations. And maybe it will take a small business owner to figure that out. So good news for Sarah Nelson. She'll be on the show at about 5:10. I'm excited to talk with her. Don't forget, I am on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRants. And yes, I am back. This is Jason Rants, not Jason Matera, who filled in for me yesterday because I was out getting eye surgery. I am back with my eye.
Just one?
Just the one.
Where's right the other now. One?
The other one is struggling a little bit because I just had eye surgery and it's a little bit blurry, but I am back. My eye is intact.
So if I see you like closing one eye, it's just because like you're reading something and you need a little more clear?
I'll give you the quick update and then we can move on. I have monovision. Do you know what that is?
I mean, I'm going to assume it sounds like you see out of one eye primarily.
Well, it's kind of. So my right eye can see up close but not far.
Okay.
My left eye can see far but not up close.
Oh, wow. That sounds awful.
No. It's so for most people or maybe some people, your brain, I have a big brain, and it's able to process that. So it doesn't really cause any issues. However, my left eye that sees far has weakened a little bit because the older you get. I mean, I've been 28 for almost 12 years at this point.
More like 30 years.
Shut up. I'm 39 years old. It's weakened a little bit. It's not quite 20/20 like I want. So I went in to get it LASIKed, basically, just to make it so that it's better. Because if I do it that way, instead of creating my right eye to see better far away, that would likely mean that in 5 to 10 years, I would have to wear reading glasses. But fixing the further away eye to get it sharpened would probably mean I don't have to get reading glasses within 5 to 10 years. So we'll see how it goes.
Did they use a lightsaber when they did the LASIK? I saw that on a TV show one time that they use a lightsaber.
How do you think they do it? It's a laser.
I mean, that's what I figured was the lightsaber this whole time.
They play the weird music that sounds. It can't be exactly Star Wars because they'll get sued, but it's very similar to that. It was a great experience, and it is just still weird when you're having surgery on your eye because you can quite literally see it. There's no turning away. If
there's
you turn
no
away,
other way.
It doesn't work. So you have to look at it when it's happening, but it was fine. And they hop you up on Valium beforehand. Although the Valium didn't kick in as much as I remember Valium kicking in the last time I took it like 10 years ago.
So you wore a brave face while you did it? Did you get a lollipop afterwards?
I felt fine. It's weird. It doesn't hurt. There's no pain at all because your eye is completely numb. So you barely even feel the pressure when they use an eye pen to write on your eye to do the four quadrants of your eye. But it just feels weird in your head because it's like, what are you doing?
I would have a panic attack.
You can see the squeegee of them putting the flap back over my eye. And it's like, oh my God, if you think about it, it's creepy. But that's why they give you Valium. The only downside was afterwards, I was like, you know, you can give me some more Valium. And they're like, what do you mean? Are you okay? I go, yeah, I just want more. They're like, we can't do that. I'm like, I'm not asking for much. I'm, you know, give me like 70 bottles of it.
Did you tell them that you weren't a narc?
Yeah, no. They said no, and they did the right thing because I would have taken it.
You should have done the secret handshake. The secret handshake is what gets you that.
Yeah, that definitely. I don't know the secret handshake. Okay, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
Wrestler Tamira Mensah Stock. She won the gold in women's wrestling for the United States And in the process, she stole our hearts. She stole our hearts.
You have a heart? I thought you just got your eyes
done. I didn't think I had a heart until I saw this amazing woman, this amazing athlete, who up until this point, no one has ever heard of. No one knows who she is. If I asked you yesterday who she was, you would have no understanding of like, who, what? Wrestling? Women don't wrestle. That's for men. That's what people would say. And you would slap them and say, we break down these gender stereotypes and social norms that you want to push on us. And then we're all like, women have been wrestling for at least a few months, right? Is this goes back long?
2 decades.
Two decades. People would have no clue who she is. However, people kind of now are starting to know who she is. And every single time they see a clip of her now speaking after she won that gold medal, they fall in love with her because her attitude is in such conflict with the attitudes expressed from some of the other high-profile athletes who have been competing in the Olympics for the United States. They don't seem to like this country all that much, or they like to exclusively focus on the things that they hate about this country. And then you have Tamyra.
It feels amazing. I love representing the U.S. I freaking love living there. I love it. And I'm so happy I get to represent USA.
And she's got the flag draped over her shoulders. This is how you're supposed to respond on the international level when representing this country. And doing so doesn't mean, because I have no idea what her politics are. I have no idea what her passions are politically. Anything beyond wrestling, I have no idea.
She owns a puppy. I know that.
She owns a puppy and she loves her mother. Beyond that, I don't really know anything about her. I have to assume that like everybody, including me, including you guys listening, you certainly can have issues with certain policies that are in place, politicians who are in power. You can hate certain things about this country, but not hate this country. She chose to focus on the positive because without the rights that she has in this country, the support that she has because of our freedoms here, she wouldn't be in a position to wrestle like this and be put on the international stage. And she knows that. She knows that. And she's celebrating it. She's celebrating it. And I love everything about this speech and this athlete.
I'm feeling very happy and I keep trying not to cry, but it keeps happening. And I just want to go into a dark room and just cry. I'm gonna cry from joy.
I mean, that's just so adorable. That's what you want to see. The reason why people know her or Sam Kendrick's pole vaulter, right? The heck is a pole vault? This is not even a sport. This stop this. The only people,
I mean, have you ever
the only
tried
reason
it?
People watch, no, because I'm not an idiot. The only reason people watch that is because they think someone's going to impale themselves on the pole or fall over the other side or the pole will break. That's the only reason why people actually watch that. And yet, you know, Sam Kendrick, someone who you've never heard of before, because of the last Olympics, a moment of his went viral. He was doing practice runs. The national anthem started to play. He immediately drops the pole, stops, puts his hand over his heart, and pays attention and honors this country and honors the flag. We fall in love with those people. And let me tell you, if we had more of those people putting themselves out there in that way, celebrating this country and everything that we stand for, guess what? The Olympics ratings wouldn't be as bad as Chris Cuomo's.
Wow.
Yeah.
I never put two and two together.
They're so bad. They are almost as low as Brian Stelter's weekend show.
Ooh.
That's awful.
That would be tragic.
Wouldn't you be more excited if you liked more of the players? Like, would you watch her wrestle tomorrow,
sure,
if there was a match?
If it wasn't on at 2:30 in the morning.
Whenever, but you would DVR it. I would put a note on my DVR to see that. I want to see her play now.
I want to see her succeed.
I wanted to see Sam Kendrick's play. He ended up getting COVID, suspiciously, by the way. There's something up with that. And they ended up having to pull him from competition. I had set up just to see, on my YouTube TV to see that performance.
You still have YouTube TV?
That's the only thing I have. It's the best. Well, what do you mean, do you still have it?
I thought you got mad at them.
I get everything. No, At YouTube TV?
Yeah, because they raised their prices like twice in like a 6-month span.
No, I got mad at Netflix and I canceled my Netflix.
Mm.
I don't get mad at YouTube TV because then I would have no, I would have access to nothing with that. That's the only way I can see any content on television. 1-800-465-877 if you want to join the conversation, send me a text. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. Knowing it's unconstitutional, the Biden administration decided to move forward anyway via the CDC, telling people, oh, you don't have to pay your rent to the property owners that you are stealing from. Oh, and good news, you're not going to be evicted for it. Now, of course, they didn't offer any help to the property owners, to the landlords, because the Democratic Party, generally speaking, right now, believe that anyone who owns property is privileged. They don't warrant any support. You have so much money. After all, how do you have this property? That's what they believe. And so they announced a new ban on evictions. And they say, well, it's technically narrowed from this all-out ban, so that means it's constitutional. That is a nonsensical argument. They know it. I mean, it applies to, quote, counties experiencing substantial and high levels of community transmission levels. Well, yeah. That's like everywhere when it comes to COVID, based on the way that they are describing it. And this extension is 60 days. It will last through October 3rd. Or 30 days, I guess. And when talking about transmission levels, which is just the case rate, that doesn't mean anything. Not anymore. Not when you compare it to hospitalization rates or deaths. They're just saying cases. And they're doing it across a county. Not a city, not a town, county. So what does that mean? It means you are comparing Sultan to Seattle or to Everett. You're saying Sultan and Everett need to be treated exactly the same. You're saying North Bend or Covington, Maple Valley, that should be compared to Seattle. That doesn't seem right to me. Because all cities are different. All cities are handled differently from a hospital standpoint. They have differences when it comes to the vaccination rate. Pretending none of that exists, that there's no difference, is wrong. It's wrong. And it's hurting a lot of people. I know they want to pretend that this is all about helping people, but it's really not. Sorry. How many jobs do we have open right now in Washington State that are not filled? We're hearing story after story after story, pretty much across the board, but especially in these big cities, that they can't find people to work. They can't find people to work, they say. And part of it is because you're getting more money to not work from the federal government than you would to work. And so you've incentivized people to not get a job. And then they could use that and just say, oh, yeah, I'm not working, so I'm not going to pay my rent. Why not give the extra stimulus money or COVID relief funds, just give it directly to the landlords, cut into the rent that's owed? How about do it that way? Of course, we're not going to do that because they're privileged. There's also just two conflicting positions that the Democratic Party is putting out there right now. Position number one is that there are jobs open, and so people can find jobs. The economy is fine. But also they're saying people aren't working, so they can't pay their rent. Well, which is it? Are there plenty of jobs open and there's not a real issue? Or there aren't and they can't pay their rent? They're taking two different positions. Well, for some people in some places they can. Okay, fine. But you're not helping specifically the people who can't find work. Right? You're quote unquote helping everybody. This is absurd, and it's unconstitutional, and they know it's unconstitutional. They know it's unconstitutional. They're doing it anyway. Why? Because they can get away with it, because there are no consequences to that. They know that the amount of time it's going to take to go through the court system to get to the Supreme Court is going to be longer than the actual eviction moratorium. And by the way, if at the end of that eviction moratorium they realize, oh, actually, it's going way slower than we thought, they'll just renew it again. And maybe they'll make one small tweak to it so they can think they can trigger an all-new case, a new strategy in front of the courts. And of course, when you look at the media, CNN in particular, they treat this as if Joe Biden is the hero president. In fact, there's a CNN politics analysis. It's a tweet that's quoted as saying, President Biden shows he's ready to make drastic moves in the COVID-19 fight, even if he's not sure they're legal. No judgment there. It sounds kind of like they're saying, look at him. He's doing what's right for America. And yet, Trump sends out a tweet, and all of a sudden, it's an assault on democracy. This is a tyrant. He is a lawless president. He's trying to become a monarch. He has no respect for the rule of law. Biden, hero. Trump, evil. I went back, and this took me 13 seconds. I timed it to find a bunch of different CNN headlines going after Trump. Trump intensifies assault on rule of law as he fights for re-election. Is Biden assaulting the rule of law by actively saying he's just going to ignore what the Supreme Court has said? That's not an assault on the rule of law. Trump's unbroken pattern of disdain for the rule of law, says CNN. But Biden has no disdain. Think Trump's acting like a dictator now? What if he's reelected after this? Oh, okay. Alarm grows over Trump administration acting, quote, more akin to a dictatorship, end quote, as he denies election defeat. Okay. CNN isn't hiding their hypocrisy. It feels like they're embracing it, and a lot of Democrats are embracing it. The exact behavior that they claimed Trump was engaged in, which, by the way, wasn't even accurate, they're now suddenly saying it's a good thing. We love it. And part of the reason why they're doing this is because this is a party right now that's run by the squad. They made a whole big stink. All the progressives within the Democratic Party made a big stink. They could have done this legislatively, right? Do the Republicans or the Democrats hold power in the House? What's the answer? Say Democrats.
Democrats, Jason.
Very clearly. The Senate, while technically a tie, who breaks the tie? Kamala Harris.
Kamala Harris, Jason.
Kamala Harris. What party does she belong to? See, she's a socialist, but she's technically a Democrat.
She's a socialist, Jason, but she's technically
okay,
a Democrat.
Okay, we don't have to just go overboard. You can just say Democrat. Relax, man. They could pass something if they wanted to. They could try, but they're not because they don't even have the support within the Democratic Party. And Senator John Kennedy, our friend from Louisiana, called it out on Fox News.
Well, I think it is unconstitutional. That's never stopped the permanent Washington types from doing something, but I do think it's unconstitutional, and I think it's unwise. I don't want anybody to have to lose their home, but look, it's time that we rejoin the world. And we have spent, we meaning the Congress, about $4.7 trillion helping the American people recover from the coronavirus. Our economy is clearly recovering. In my state, we sent Louisiana $550 million to help people with rental assistance. We've only spent 50. So that tells me there's not a big need there.
It's funny because we've had funds in Washington state to go to this very issue since February. What is taking so long? You say that the need is urgent, right? And for some people, it is urgent, that kind of help. There's no doubt about it. They overstate the amount of people who need this because we know there are some people who are taking advantage of it. And they didn't bother to put rules in place with the moratorium to address that. But if it's so urgent, why aren't you putting out the money? The millions and millions and millions of dollars that you, why aren't you putting out the money? It's urgent. Well, we need more time. For what? We need infrastructure in place. Well, what have you been doing since February? Well, you know, we had to do, you know, dot our I's and cross our T's. Did you do that yet? There's a lot of I's and a lot of T's. And if I'm being honest, we put the dots on the T's and the we swiped through the I's. It was very confusing. We had to go back.
Don't forget the lowercase j's. There's dots on those.
It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And of course, you still have people on the left who are going after Biden for being too slow to come around and break the law.
I think proof of that is the fact that the White House had no plans to issue this new moratorium and thought that it would be sufficient to punt to Congress.
You mean have you guys do your job and not have the administration knowingly break the law? You're proud of pressuring Joe Biden into breaking the law. Joe Biden, who does not have a spine. He had one, and then he realized, oh, no, never mind. My bad. People are mad. Can't upset the squad. They're going to send some angry tweets.
With just a few hours to go in terms of the deadline being about to elapse. And we didn't go back to our districts and stay there. We rallied out here. And we raised this issue.
Okay, yeah, we got it. You're a hero. That's Congressman Mondaire Jones of New York, who wants to put like 14,000 liberal judges on the Supreme Court, but only liberal judges, to ensure that he has all the power in the world. So we wouldn't even have to go to the Supreme Court, because we could just, it'd be a fait accompli. We would know that if we stacked it with a whole bunch of progressive activists, we'd always win. Okay, yeah, we got it. Thank you. You're such a hero. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation, send me a text message. I've got my exclusive story up right now. Our friend Jason Matera talked about it yesterday, about the decision to keep the support staff for the King County Sheriff's Department home remotely 100% of the time, at least right now, because of how incredibly dangerous it is in downtown Seattle. So if you want to check that story out, you can send me a text with the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a direct link to my story. Welcome back to the Jason RANTZ Show. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I really do appreciate it. King County keeps buying a bunch of hotels in order to house the homeless. Now, I haven't seen any results that are even promising coming out. They're just like, we're buying a bunch of hotels and we're going to put a whole bunch of homeless people there. Oh, yeah. How many people end up graduating from whatever program you're calling this and get into non-subsidized housing? We're buying hotels. No, I know. But can you? What's been the result of all this? Spending a lot of your money. Well, yes, thank you. Was that a snarky response? Are you actually getting homeless people off the streets and into homes? Yeah, into these hotels. No, I got that part. Once you get them into your hotel, how long does it take to get them out of the hotel? We're buying hotels. Thank you. So you don't really have the answers yet. What is especially worrisome beyond just buying hotels, spending your tax dollars, and not telling us any significant stories of results, is that they're doing this without getting any community buy-in. So, for example, when his name is Kartok, he just moved into a condo in Redmond. And a few days later, he finds out, oh, you just bought a hotel nearby that you're putting a whole bunch of homeless people in. He told Como TV. He was understandably annoyed.
I would definitely have lived in the Bellevue area then.
He wouldn't have lived there. He would have moved to a better neighborhood that actually cares about its community. In this case, King County government, they just bought the old Silver Cloud Inn in the Overlake neighborhood, about a half a mile away from the Microsoft headquarters. And folks like Rachel say, this is a threat to my kids who go to a martial arts school really close by.
If a homeless come here, it will be dangerous for us to go everywhere. You know, Seattle, around Seattle, so bad.
I love that she immediately points to Seattle, because we do things so poorly here. And when we say the bad policies of Seattle spread, hello, this is what we mean. It spreads. And this particular hotel is supposed to be for the chronically homeless. These are the people who are the hardest cases to crack. A 24/7 facility is going to have support services, case management. On paper, sounds really good. In practice, not showing us a lot of results yet. And so Jessica, who owns a dance studio nearby, She worries that the program isn't going to work.
Maybe the facility can help some people, but there's always going to be some folks that aren't a success story. So what then happens? If they are kicked out of that facility, are they going to be parking in my driveway?
Yeah. But worse than that, and they generally don't leave the area that you brought them to. This became a controversy, not just because of a lack of detail as to how these programs work and what the success stories look like in the past. It's because they don't even attempt to get community approval. They don't even make the attempt to go into the community and say, hey, by the way, this is what we're thinking about doing. We'd like to do it. This is an urgent situation, yes, but we're willing to spend a week or two, maybe a month, talking to you about your concerns and then not just addressing your concerns with the intent of getting your buy-in for something that we truly believe is going to work. But you know what? You might have some really good ideas that we can implement or concerns that we can address that maybe we haven't been thinking about. They don't do that. They just hosted a community meeting, both the county and the city, after they bought the property.
I thought that they had to tell us first.
It turns out they don't have to tell you. They don't. This was a private real estate transaction, and according to the mayor's spokesperson, it doesn't require a public comment period. But here's the deal. Let's say that that is 100% true, and I think it is. Why not just get the approval of the community, or at least let them weigh in so that they can feel like they've been heard? I know from personal experience what this is like, because I used to live in an apartment in Seattle where a block and a half away, the city decided to install a tiny home village. They had made the decision, accidentally announced that they had made the decision. When I called them out on air and at mynorthwest.com and ktth.com, they said, whoa, no, that was just a mistake in language. We have not made a decision. We are holding three community meetings first. We're going to listen to what you guys have to say. And after those three meetings, then we'll come up with a potential plan. Because we care about what you think of. What would you think about this? And I knew that they were lying because I had all the evidence that I needed. It turns out I'm actually good at what it is I do, despite what the stranger might tell you. I'm very good at what I do. In fact, on the third meeting, they said, we're going to do this. Here's how it's going to work. So you already decided, then you lied about it. Then you told us that you were going to have three community meetings. That was also a lie before making that decision. Why not get community buy-in? What is so hard about even trying? Because at the end of the day, we can at least step back and say, okay, we at least feel heard. You ignored us, our recommendation, but you heard us. Maybe next time, because I trust you, at least you're going to come to us and listen to us. Maybe next time we'll win that argument. They don't do that because they don't care what you think. That's really what this is. They don't care what you think. They care about what they want to do because there's never any punishment from an election standpoint as far as the progressives that get involved. The King County executive, it's going to be either Dow Constantine, insane person, or Joe Wynn, more insane person. So there's not going to be any consequences there. That's why you guys got to get more involved and vote. Your mayor in Redmond did this. Are there going to be any political consequences for that? Or are you just going to mindlessly go ahead and put a fill in that circle next to their name? Come on, guys. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. More of the Jason Rancho.